about to say, I don't want you to listen right now. I want you to take these ideas and find a little memory cell and store it somewhere and come back to it in 10 years. Most of yeshivas have challenged, and we try to speak to you as 18-year-olds, and we also try to speak with you for whom you will be in 15 years, in 20 years, and especially in today's world where yeshiva experience has shrunken so much compared to where it was 200 years ago. So it's important that we take the long-term into account also. Long ball, not just short ball. So, as you know, and you're well aware by now, so much of your avodas Hashem is chesed. You can't just insulate yourself, and Baruch Hashem, you have so many opportunities here in yeshiva to perform chesed. And those who haven't yet taken those opportunities, now is really a good halfway point to reassess and to find opportunities. And obviously the most obvious is learning with the Arkenu boys. They're probably all taken by now, but other learning with younger boys from the yeshiv. It's certainly something which is vital and crucial towards, first of all, just personal well-being. I mean, people that perform chesed are just happier people and more balanced people. And obviously there's a, you know, just perform chesed to be a better person. It's not just self-serving. It's also altruistic and to be an Oved Hashem. In addition to that, one of the questions I ask boys and young men when they first decide where they're going to live right after they're married, and the first question you have to ask yourself whenever you join a shul or a community or a college campus, what can I do? Right? You don't want to be a taker and not a giver. You don't want to be a consumer and not a producer. So you're on a campus. What's your job? Okay, my job is I hand out challah roll Shabbos afternoon. I'm the gabbai, gabbai rishon, gabbai sheni, gabbai shlishi. I'm the head of the adult education. I always want to be a giver. Part of a community, being part of a community is giving, is delivering to other people. And of course, that allows you to take because you're part of the community. If you become a taker and just a consumer, a parasite, it's really not morally healthy. So, there's something that lies right at the scene between those two issues, between number one, chesed in general, number two, communal chesed and communal contribution. And it appears in this week's parsha, and I want you to be involved in it for a good long time. But one day, you'll wake up one morning and say, oh, remember every time I spoke about this 15 years ago. Maybe now's the time. Maybe this is my moment. It's called chesed shel emes. And Yaakov asks Yosef, and when you involve yourself with bearing other people, that's called the chesed shel emes, because it's the purest chesed. Because anytime you perform a chesed, there's always some hidden or latent expectation of compensation, a friendship, of admiration, of something. There's always a gain to chesed. A person will feel indebted to you, you'll strengthen the relationship. A person leaves this world, there's no expectation. There's no personal benefit. It's pure, selfless, absolute self-sacrifice. And a chesed that could be very difficult. And that's as I spoke about this morning. Sometimes you reach these pure moments of avodas Hashem. We spoke this morning in the Avos of Nosson Shir about mitzvos without schar and just mitzvos for mitzvah's sake. And this is chesed without schar. This is chesed for chesed's sake. And that's why it's referred to as chesed shel emes. Now, not everyone has the stomach for it. But it doesn't mean you can't be involved, although for some people you may feel like maybe I have to keep my distance. But even if you want to be involved in support staff, being involved in the Chevra Kaddish is not necessarily putting a body into a ground or performing a tahara on a body. You can be involved in the Chevra Kaddish on many levels. You can be the one that goes over to the home and sets up the home to sit Shiva. You can be the one that brings the Sefer Torah, that gathers Sidurim, that makes announcements, that puts out emails. There's so many areas that we have to be involved with today, especially when we're setting up a shiva. You don't have to be. I'm officially on the Chevra Kaddish and Alon Shvut. I think I've had contact with a body once. I know their own call. Baruch Hashem is a younger community, but they know they can call me, and I'm always there to, they need someone to come bring some food over or set up minyanim, schlep some chairs or something. Is it really chesed shel emes in terms of the direct contact? Of course it isn't, but it's certainly inching towards that space and inching towards that experience. But I want to point out two additional elements about being involved in the Chevra Kaddisha. As we've also spoken about so often this year, we're trying to develop a healthy and delicate balance between two worlds, a healthy and delicate calibration between recognizing this is a transient and fleeting world, and it's just an entrance way, and the next world is the palace, but it doesn't mean we ignore the entrance way. We're not morbid. We don't think about death. We don't play in some games all the time. This world is totally futile, and we're doing that healthy balance and self-esteem and optimism and a sense of life and a zest of life, and those are all healthy, to embrace this world and to, it's all healthy parts of your avodas Hashem. But certainly, in today's world, there's a great specter and a great fear of overindulgence and losing sight of reality and of eternity and of becoming so addicted and so immersed in this world of flash and pizzazz and fantasy and flair that you forget where you are and you lose your bearings. And as you all saw, obviously, Monday was a different type of a feel. There were many layers to the experience on Monday. Those who went to Levaya, there was a national event, there was a terror victim. But even you go to Levaya for this 97-year-old Agnes who passes away, and Baruch Hashem lived a wonderful life, and no one's shedding too many tears about her. They're celebrating her life. The sense of mortality and of fragility and of dependency, and then it helps you maintain your proper alignment between the two worlds. Now, that word, like those of you who are car mechanics. Any car mechanics here? Okay, so in my past career as a car mechanic, worked for Jiffy. So in my past career as a car mechanic, alignment was everything. Getting all the tires aligned right, and today they have computer programs to align. It's really about aligning your two worlds, always making sure that you and your two worlds are aligned, like in this perfect alignment, knowing how to balance those. I remember I have a friend, actually now became a very important rabbi in New York City. Probably some of you know him, Rabbi Steinmetz. He was a friend of mine. He is a friend of mine. We learned together many, many years ago, and YU is now the rabbi of KJ. So I remember a couple of years ago, probably 20 years back, he wrote it wasn't really a blog, it was an email. And he was talking about how he was preparing himself one cold Sunday, January Sunday in Montreal, and he was getting ready for the Super Bowl, and it was, I don't know, in those days, the Redskins versus the Houston Oilers. Okay, this is how old, long ago, well, it's not that long ago, whoever it was, and all of a sudden he got a call as the rabbi of the town, and a woman had passed away, nothing tragic, nothing unexpected, but he had to attend to the burial. And after switching gears in midstream, he looked back at his day and he questioned, he was prepared to celebrate thugs with big muscles and pajamas hitting one another. And instead he spent the day celebrating a woman who lived a long life and of virtue and nobility and philanthropy and decency and celebrating the dignity of the human condition and the fragility. And he just realized that his day had been shifted. But Baruch Hashem, his takeaway from that day, again, I'm paraphrasing, it was so much deeper, so much more meaningful than he just celebrated a bunch of athletes with on steroids, you know, hocking one another in the head. Okay, so it doesn't mean you shouldn't watch sports, but every once in a while, it's a good reality check, is what I would call it. And if you have the opportunity to be involved in it, I think it's something you should just be aware of. I'm planting a seed right now. Like I said before, sometimes especially, what I'm trying to help you guys avoid is this polarization or dichotomization where, okay, the way I define religion, I'm a reader, I'm a thinker, I donate money to the shul, I'm more of the sophisticated. And then the other types of Jews, they're the mikveh dippers and the Tehillim chanters and the body buriers, and, you know, that's not really who I am. I'm more refined. I sit around the Shabbos table and critique the rabbi's sermon and think about the future of Jewish education and the center of the Jewish experience and the experience of the Jewish center. And that's how I define my Yiddishkeit. You know, those, you know, who does the taharas? Those guys with the long curl locks and the sweaty frocks. And that's who that. Well, you'd be surprised to know that in communities it's not true. And obviously in larger communities that can afford the resources to hire out, but and certainly in Eretz Yisrael where it's institutionalized nationally, although it isn't in the Gush, it's not like a city. So it's just something I want you to store away, keep in mind. Obviously be honest with yourself. You may be squeamish, it may be too hard for you, it's not an easy job. Maybe you want to be involved in more extrinsic and peripheral parts of the experience. But just keep it in mind when the time comes and you wake up one day and you're 33 years old and you're married and living in middle America somewhere, and you've got your two cars in the driveway, and it's freezing cold one January morning, you're taking your two kids to school, and say, wait a second, you know, they just put out an email on the shul list, and they're looking for new recruits to the Chevra Kadisha. Now, Amir Tashem, I'll try to have someone speak with you about the Chevra Kadisha, not ironically, but sadly and meaningfully, the grandfather of the boy who was killed is very, very involved in a lot of communal affairs. Just a prince of a person. He's very involved. I don't know if you saw at the funeral, there was a whole section of people with yellow or orange fleeces. Did you see that whole section? If you look carefully at the lapel, these were the people nationally who were involved in Yechidat Chilutz. It means if you go on a teal somewhere and you get stuck in a canyon or a ravine or your car gets stuck in the mud, you get caught in a flash flood, or you wander in the desert and you lose your way, these are the teams of people that will find you and will track you and will go after you. And And it's a very, very fascinating group of people. Obviously, very, very committed. They could be called in the middle of the night. These are people that are literally saving lives. I don't know if it was that group of people, but just as a very interesting anecdote, 2.5 years ago during the summer kidnappings, when the Army basically threw its hands up and after 27 days was no closer to discovering these boys or their bodies, the major shift happened when the tour guides and the rescue teams went to the Army and approached them and said, let us take over the search. Because we know every single rock and every single cliff and every single tree. We know this land like the back of our hands. We know this land like the back of our hands. And the Army allowed them to enter. Within 48 hours, they found the bodies because they had buried the bodies underneath artificially replanted olive trees. So it was almost impossible for anyone that didn't know landscaping and topography and terrain to notice it. If you walk by, and I walk by, you just see a tree there. But if your eyes are really trained, you saw the earth disturbed under the tree or something strange, a little brush near the tree that wouldn't normally grow. I don't know what they saw, but something of that nature. So it was this group or groups like it. So he's also involved, the grandfather, he's also involved in the Chevra Kadisha. He's very involved. So seeing him at the Levaya, not literally, he's a person's only in Eretz Yisrael, as you know, they put the body literally, you're holding a body and you're grasping it, but it goes on a stretcher, but the only reason there was a coffin is because it was a military funeral. Military funerals are all coffins, but Eretz Yisrael, the regular funerals. I know for myself, I come from a community that was very, very active, and I come from Brooklyn, so I grew up in Brooklyn in the 70s and 80s, in Flatbush. This is a very active community, which at this point is not as active, certainly for our sector, as it used to be. And there's a lot of people who live there who end up passing and come to Eretz Yisrael for burials, also in this week's parsha. And I try to make it my business to attend as many of those levayas as I can, even though I don't really know the people that well. But the fact that I davened with them in shul 30 years ago, so that means I should at least try to. Rabbi Ryan is a tremendous tzaddik in that regard. Sometimes Ellie and I joke, we would go over to Rabbi Ryan and say, you look happy today, you must have been through a funeral. Because he so enjoys doing the mitzvah and going to someone's levaya, and then he'll show up to your grandfather's brother-in-law's aunt passed away, and you don't even know who her last name is. Rabbi Ryan will try to get to levaya on time and stay the whole time and stay for the spade. I mean, that's just the tzaddik he is, and I've told you, tzaddikim don't always come dressed in ways that, you know, that appear in the dictionary. There's also a historical note, and hopefully this will be enunciated, Zayin Adar, if we get a chance to speak about it, is that because Chevra Kadishas were, what's the word I'm looking for, were coalescent. Namely, you couldn't have multiple Chevra Kadishas. There's only one cemetery, especially in foreign lands, so the Ferdinand of Austria would give the Jews of the local town a plot of land, and everyone had to play nice in the sandbox. You could open up your own shul, you could open up your own school, but you couldn't open up your own funeral and your own plot land. So it became a rallying point of Jewish unity. As different and as splintered as the communities were or weren't, everyone had to cooperate for the Chevra Kadisha. There was only one burial access point and one set of logistics, and everyone had to. And because of that, Chevra Kadishos in Eastern and Western Europe, but certainly Eastern Europe, loomed much larger than burial societies. So especially when you go to Poland, those of you who are going to go to Poland, or even if you don't go on the Holocaust ship, you may come across a little building with an engraving called Kolel Chevra Kadisha. What do you call Chevra Kadisha? Kolel for dead people? No. It meant that the Chevra Kadisha became so large and people gave their money that they started to support Kolels. So the kol in the town was supported by the Chevra Kadisha because they had a lot of funds, and people were willing to suspend their trivial, petty differences and just join together. You'll find a tamchoi, Chevra Kadisha, where people, a soup kitchen that was run by the Chevra Kadisha. So the Chevra Kadishas played very, very instrumental roles in the community. It wasn't just to bury people that had passed. Very, very instrumental in communal substructure and infrastructure. I remember speaking to you a couple of weeks ago that one of the shocking developments of Shner Zalman of Liadi, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, that showed that this was a special phenom, that this was a child prodigy, was that he was appointed titularly, symbolically, to the Chevra Kadisha, I think of Vilna, I believe, Chevra Kadisha of Vilna at the age of 5. Obviously, he wasn't involved in digging ditches at 5 or burying bodies, but you, in those days, to be appointed Chevra Kadisha was the biggest honor you could have. Oh, you got selected for the Chevra Kadisha? Make a kiddush. Like, you are now recognized as someone in this community of stature and of consensus and you could be a Chevra Kadisha member. You were like a rock star. Obviously not with all the celebrity, because we kept it quiet, and it was done very, very quietly and very, very confidentially. And so there's a lot here to think about. And so when you read the Pasuk in Parshas Vayechi, all you're trying to do is plant these little sleeper cells in your mind and attach ideas to words, so that one day when you wake up and it's 20 years down the line, you read Parshas Vayechi, it's a lighthouse. Let me think about where I am. And one day it's Parshas Vayechi, and you read Chesed Shel Ames, and oh, there's something called Chesed Shel Ames, and can I be part of it? Should I be part of it? So, again, don't judge people who aren't part of it. There are plenty of good reasons not to be part of it, but just keep it in the back of your mind somewhere. Okay? Okay. You guys are going to help me give share today. I'm way, way too tired.